Did you kidnap Heather Ellis?
No, I did not.
Do you know who kidnapped her?
I do not.
Do you know if she's been kidnapped?
I do not.
Tammy Moore was finally speaking in a courtroom under oath at her trial for kidnapping 20-year-old Heather Ellis. And she came off, to many at least, as defensive and combative, which might be the way you'd come off if you were wrongly accused of a heinous crime. But it also might be the way you'd act if you were guilty and were trying your hardest to make the jury of your peers believe otherwise.
Is this the first opportunity that you've had to publicly declare your innocence?
It is. I had a gag order on my case.
Are you glad that you're able to tell people what happened and what you did do and didn't do?
I want people to know the truth, and I too want Heather found. I think she deserves to be found, and I think they botched her case and didn't do justice for Heather.
I covered Heather's disappearance along with the trial of another one of the suspects in episode 45. So before listening to this episode, please make sure to check that one out first. Tammy Moore's trial concluded in October 2018, but would it mean that Heather Ellis's family would finally be getting answers? This is Jillian, and you are listening to Court Junkie, episode 62. The following is a quick recap of Heather's disappearance. On December 18th, 2013, 20-year-old Heather Ellis went on a first date with a guy named Steven that she knew from high school. They went out to dinner and then went driving around in Steven's car, where he taught her how to drive stick shift for the first time. Afterwards, they went back to Steven's mom's house, watched a movie, and then he dropped Heather off at her apartment at about 1:30 in the morning. Steven went home, and he and Heather exchanged a few text messages, agreeing to see each other again the following day. And then Steven went to bed. According to Heather's cell phone records, she received a call from a payphone at 1:35 a.m., not long after she was dropped off. The call lasted for a little less than 5 minutes. Heather then called her roommate Bree, who was out of town at the time. Bree later testified at trial that Heather had told her that a man she had had a previous relationship with, Sydney Moore, had called her from the payphone and told her that he was leaving his wife, Tammy. Heather was upset. She had reportedly been moving on with her life since her relationship with Sydney had ended a few months prior, and now here he was, calling her. According to Heather's cell phone records, she then tried calling the payphone back 8 times, but no one answered. At 3:16 a.m., Heather called Sydney's cell phone, but that went unanswered too. At 3:17 a.m., she called his cell phone again, and this time, the call lasted for just over 4 minutes. At 3:38 a.m., she called Sydney's phone 3 more times. Her phone records would show that these calls were not made from her apartment, as the others were, but these were made from Peachtree Landing, which was about 10 miles away from her apartment. And after that, Heather's phone never made any calls again. Her car was found abandoned at Peachtree Landing the next day, but Heather has not been seen or heard from since. And even as of this recording, she is still missing. Sydney and his wife Tammy were eventually arrested. Sydney had admitted to investigators that he had made that payphone call to Heather that night, but he said he was only trying to get Heather to leave him alone. That Tammy had found out about the affair, had taken away his cell phone, and had even chained him to the bed at night. But investigators were convinced that the couple had lured Heather out to Peachtree Landing that night, kidnapped her, and then murdered her. They were both charged with murder, but those charges were eventually dropped. Instead, prosecutors ultimately charged them with kidnapping and conspiracy to commit kidnapping. Sydney is also being charged with obstruction of justice. In episode 45, I told you about Sydney's kidnapping trial and how it ended with a hung jury. Sydney was then tried for obstruction and was found guilty and sentenced to 10 years in prison. He has yet to be retried on the kidnapping charge. But now, in this episode, it's Tammy's turn. Tammy's trial started in October 2018. Many of the witnesses, especially in the beginning of the trial, were the same witnesses who testified at Sydney's trial, so I'm not going to go over their testimony again. Instead, there's definitely a lot of new information in this trial that I will be covering, including Tammy's version of events. In their opening statements, Assistant Solicitor Chris Helms told the jury that the evidence will speak for itself, and that when they hear it, they will be firmly convinced that on December 18th, 2013, Tammy and Sydney conspired, planned, and executed that plan to kidnap Heather Elvis. Helms admitted that it's a circumstantial case, but said most criminal cases are based on circumstantial evidence. He said every piece of evidence is a puzzle piece, and when put together, you can come to a logical conclusion. He pointed at a large photo of Heather that was displayed for the jury and said, "We are here today because she can't be." And then he pointed at Tammy, seated at the defense table, and said, "And she can't be here because she decided that she couldn't be here." Helms said Heather and Sydney had an affair in mid-2013. She was a hostess at Tilted Kilt, and he was a night maintenance man. Their affair developed, and they spoke on the phone and texted each other constantly. But one event caused them to stop talking abruptly. Tammy found out about it and called Heather to confront her. Helms said that co-workers will testify that Heather was terrified of Tammy, that one day, when her co-workers played a prank on her by telling her that Tammy was on her way to their work, Heather grabbed her things and fled. He said they would show the jury threatening text messages that Tammy sent to Heather. When Tammy found out about the affair, she laid down the law. "She wears the pants in the family," Helms said, "and Sydney was on probation. She took his phone, wouldn't let him work at Tilted Kilt anymore, and she chained him to the bed at night." Meanwhile, Heather was trying to move on and see other people, but then she started gaining weight, something her co-workers and friends noticed.
"You're going to hear that she starts gaining weight. She goes up 3 bra sizes at work as part of her uniform. That's how they know. You'll hear the testimony. Eventually, Heather and her friends come to the realization she might be pregnant. You're going to hear testimony. She starts taking pregnancy tests. And you'll hear the results of those pregnancy tests from the stand. When this gets out, this puzzle piece, if you will, when this gets out and becomes common knowledge, the fire, the jealousy that is in Tammy Moore explodes into utter rage. This is the straw that breaks the camel's back. It's one thing for you to have an affair with my husband. It's one thing for you to humiliate me in this town. But it is an absolute whole other animal for you to be carrying the child from my husband. It's unacceptable. This is where the plan starts. This is where the conspiracy is born."
He said in November 2013, Sydney and Tammy bought a new truck, a black Ford F-150, and went on a road trip with their family. Then, on the night of December 18th, they went out, had some drinks, and then started to plan. They went to a Walmart in Myrtle Beach a little after 1 a.m., where Sydney bought a pregnancy test. He said Tammy will claim the test was for her, but she was drinking that night, so that doesn't make sense. From there, he said they went to a Kangaroo gas station in downtown Myrtle Beach. Despite having 2 cell phones in their possession, they parked across the street and Sydney walked over to the payphone. The number he dialed, after 2 months of no communication, belonged to Heather. They spoke for 4 to 5 minutes. He said Heather tries to call that payphone back, but there's no answer. Time goes by. She calls Sydney's cell phone, which had been confiscated a long time ago, and has a conversation. Afterwards, Heather gets into her car and drives to the most desolate, dark place in the county, Peachtree Landing. He said there's nothing there, no lights, no cameras, no people there at almost 4 a.m., and there was a reason for that. As soon as Heather heads over there, Helms said Tammy and Sydney's truck goes there too. They didn't bank on surveillance cameras capturing their truck on video, but they did, he said. The truck drives there for a matter of minutes, then comes right back that same way. At that time, Heather's cell phone dies, and she is never heard from again. "What did they do with her?" he asked. "We don't know. Law enforcement doesn't know, and Heather's family doesn't know. 3 people know: Sydney, Tammy, and Heather." He told the jury that just as telling as their behavior before and during Heather's disappearance, So is their behavior afterwards. Life is normal again. Sydney can now go back to work, can get up to pee in the middle of the night without permission, and gets his phone back on December 19th. He said Heather's family deserves to stay in court. So does the defendant, and so does Heather. In their opening statements, one of Tammy's attorneys, Casey Brown, said the prosecution is trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. They're trying to make Tammy into a scapegoat for Heather's disappearance. He said the state is just guessing at what happened. He pointed out that she was charged with kidnapping, and then years later, they added the conspiracy charge. He said the state has to prove each and every element of the charges. For kidnapping, they must show that she unlawfully seized, abducted, and confined another person. And for the conspiracy charge, they must show that there was an agreement between two people to commit a crime that benefited both, and that one party took a step towards that. He said the state won't be able to do that because Tammy didn't kidnap nor conspire to. He said there are three things to focus on. One, evidence will show that Tammy and Heather were never together. No one will say they were ever physically together. They never met. Two, Heather was never in Sydney's truck, and there's no DNA evidence to show otherwise. And three, no one will testify that there was any kind of agreement. Tammy never agreed to any kidnapping nor conspired, and her phone records will show that she was at home at the time. He said Tammy will take the stand, that she wasn't happy about her husband cheating, but who would be? He said she did call Heather and say mean things, but her reaction was to call her ex-boyfriend and to ride around with Sydney while he went to work at night so she could keep an eye on him. Once the state started investigating, he said Tammy and her family were harassed.
So then Tammy's threat. Her children are threat. Her children are interrogated. Rumors on social media. They spread like wildfire, amplifying the level of harassment she's had to endure over the past 5 years. Folks, this is what her life has been like for the past 5 years. She's been living in this dark cloud of waiting for this day, waiting to come tell her story, tell the truth, clear her name. She didn't do this. She didn't kidnap anybody. She didn't conspire to kidnap anyone.
As her attorney spoke, Tammy cried at the defense table. Tammy Moore is innocent, folks, he concluded. The prosecution started their case by calling Heather's co-workers from Tilted Kilt to the stand. They testified that they knew about Heather's relationship with Sydney and also knew that Heather was afraid of Tammy. Jody Davenport recalled that after Heather and Sydney broke up, Heather received text messages and phone calls from Tammy.
Did you see any messages?
Yes.
Okay, and were any of those picture messages?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, and was that after the breakup?
Yes.
Okay, and tell this jury what picture you saw.
It was a picture of a woman with Sydney's face in between her legs.
Okay, and was that picture on Heather Ovis's phone?
Yes, ma'am.
And how did she respond to seeing that picture?
She was disgusted.
Now, when you say they broke up at the end of October, these phone calls, these pictures start rolling in, how was Heather mentally and physically during that time?
Section 9. That's legal. That's called speculation.
Okay. You can't get into any mental impressions, but what you actually observed, she was
just, what did you see as to how she acted and how she appeared?
She acted very paranoid. She was not herself, her normal self that we saw every day. She looked pale in the face. She just looked scared.
Okay. And who was she scared of? Who was she scared of?
Tammy.
Okay. And did she ever acted like she was scared of Sydney?
No.
Another co-worker, Jessica Cook, testified that one day while she was at work, she saw that Heather had 95 missed calls on her cell phone. She, too, said that Heather was afraid of Tammy. She told the court that one day in November, Heather came into work with a black eye and that she had never seen bruises on her before. When asked about Heather's weight gain and possible pregnancy, she said Heather took a pregnancy test at work and the test came back with an error message. Dennis Hart was a kitchen manager at Tilted Kilt. He called Heather a good employee and said she never had any problems with anyone. Dennis said he had also hired Sydney and said that after a while, he was told that Sydney and Heather were involved in a relationship. Sydney would bring Heather coffee and danishes while she was working. After Sydney stopped working there, he said he called him to see if Sydney could do some plumbing for him.
Tell this court and tell this jury, at some point on that phone call, did Tammy Moore get on the conversation?
Yes, Tammy burst, into the conversation and proceeded to tell me how Heather was causing problems for her and her family and spread rumors that she was pregnant by her husband. And she also asked me to fire her because Sydney was not allowed to work for me anymore if Heather was working there. And I explained to her I could not fire her just because she was having personal issues with her and she was a good employee, so I was not going to fire her.
He testified that he never saw Sydney back at Tilted Kilt. After that conversation, he said Heather came into work with a black eye. He had never seen her with an injury like that before. An employee with Sprint testified about two phone numbers associated with the Moores, Tammy's cell phone and Sydney's cell phone. He said that in early November, on November 2nd, 2013, at 12:45 a.m., Tammy's phone called Heather's cell phone. He said she dialed *67 prior to making the call so it would hide her number from caller ID. The call lasted for 39 seconds. About a half hour later, at 1:13 a.m., Tammy dialed Heather's number again and again dialed *67. That call lasted for only 7 seconds. An employee with T-Mobile testified about Heather's cell phone records. As you're about to see, cell phone records will play quite a big role in the state's case. Paul Witt from T-Mobile testified that the last phone call that Heather ever made was at 3:41 a.m. to Sydney's cell phone. Before that, he totaled up their communication month by month. In August, Heather called Sydney 213 times, while he called her 351 times. In September, Heather called Sydney 208 times, while he called her 350 times. In October, Heather called Sydney 199 times, and he called her 318 times. In November, when Tammy reportedly found out about their affair, Heather's phone called Sydney's 24 times, while his phone contacted her 40. And then in December, the only time they spoke on the phone was the morning of December 18th, 2013. When asked if Heather had ever tried to block her number using *67, as Tammy had, Witt said no. Michael Melson, an expert in analyzing phone data, looked at the data from Tammy, Sydney, and Heather's cell phones. He said that Sydney and Heather communicated nearly every day from mid-July until November 2nd, 2013. Sydney was also communicating with Tammy a lot during that time frame as well, but not as much as with Heather. On November 2nd, Tammy's phone contacted Heather's phone twice, and according to prior testimony, that was when she dialed *67 beforehand to block her number from showing. After this, Sydney's phone and Tammy's phone stopped communicating with each other altogether. Sydney's phone and Heather's phone continued to communicate that day, but then stopped the next day. Melson also analyzed the location data from the cell phones. After November 2nd, he said there was a notable change in where Tammy's phone went. He noticed an increase in her phone being in downtown Myrtle Beach near Heather's work, especially during the hours of 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. Her phone was also in North Myrtle Beach more, hitting in the same areas as Heather's phone. Sydney's phone was also hitting in the same areas as Heather's phone, especially in the North Myrtle Beach area. On the night Heather went missing, Tammy's and Sydney's cell phones were together. Around 1 a.m., their phones were near a Kangaroo Express gas station, right where the payphone that called Heather was located. There was no other phone activity on either phone until about 3 a.m., when the phones were tracked back to the Moore's home. He said that during the time Heather was at Peachtree Landing, there was no data available for either Tammy's or Sydney's phones. Aaron Edens, an intelligence analyst with experience in cell phone forensic investigations, was able to get even more specific about Heather's cell phone location data. He testified that he was able to look at the Google location data on Heather's phone, which he said is more specific than looking at cell phone towers. He was able to get specific coordinates of where her phone was in the hours before she disappeared. When Heather received that payphone call at 1:33 a.m., she was at her apartment on White River Drive. She was still at her apartment when she called her roommate Bree at 1:44 a.m. and when she first started trying to call the payphone back. About an hour later, her phone leaves her apartment and is near Longbeard's, a bar and grill in Myrtle Beach. This is where she continues to try and call the payphone back. At 3:17 a.m., her phone is back near her apartment, and that's when she called Sydney's cell phone, and they had a conversation that lasted for about 4 minutes. At 3:40 a.m., Heather's phone was by Peachtree Landing, where she called Sydney's cell phone 4 times. Her last call was at 3:41. Edens testified that the very final location from Heather's phone came in the form of a tower ping. It was at 3:42 and 27 seconds, where the phone hit a tower near the Waccamaw Wildlife Refuge, which is right near Peachtree Landing. When asked if he was able to get the same type of Google location from Sydney's and Tammy's phones, he said no, because their accounts had been deleted. In addition to the cell phone evidence in this case, another recurring theme is the surveillance video the state acquired from the night Heather went missing. Surveillance video from Walmart on Seaboard Street was shown to the jury. At 1:12 a.m., Sydney's truck pulls into a handicapped parking spot. He gets out of the truck and walks into Walmart, where he purchases a pregnancy test and a cigar. He leaves the Walmart at 1:21 a.m. Surveillance video from a payphone near the Walmart at Kangaroo Express was then shown to the jury. At about 1:30 a.m., you can see headlights from a vehicle, and then someone wearing a dark-colored shirt with lighter-colored pants walking up to the payphone. The person is on the phone for about 5 minutes and then walks back to their vehicle. Joyce Aland testified that she lives near Peachtree Landing, and after reading about Heather's disappearance, realized that her video surveillance cameras may have picked up something. Her surveillance video was shown to the jury. Joyce said a dark-colored pickup truck could be seen driving by around the time that Heather went missing. The timestamp was 4:42 a.m., but she said it hadn't been adjusted for daylight savings time, so it was really 3:42 a.m. The surveillance video shows no other cars driving down that road during that time frame. Joyce told the court that the only thing end-to-end on a road is houses. She said the only people traveling down that road would be people who are lost or people who live there. Another resident who lived near Peachtree Landing and owned a business nearby testified that his surveillance cameras also picked up a vehicle going towards Peachtree Road at that time. His camera showed a vehicle passing by his business towards Peachtree Landing at 3:39 a.m. and then driving back at 3:46 a.m. Grant Fredericks, a forensic video expert, testified about the headlight scene in both videos. Fredericks also testified in Sydney's trial. He told the court that based on his analysis, which included looking at headlight patterns, he believed the make and model of the vehicle in the video was a Ford F-150. And after additional testing, he said he could conclude that it belonged to the Moores. On cross-examination, however, Fredericks agreed that he couldn't tell who was driving, how many people were in the car, or where the car was actually going. Lieutenant Carmen Rodriguez with the Horry County Sheriff's Office said she spoke with Tammy when Tammy came into the police department. She came in to follow up on complaints she had filed about people harassing her and her family. She said people had been coming into her yard looking for evidence related to Heather's disappearance. Lieutenant Rodriguez recorded the conversation, which was played in court. They talked about the 1:30 a.m. payphone call that Lieutenant Rodriguez said Sydney had made to Heather. Tammy had told her that she was with Sydney in his truck that night. She asked Tammy if she knew that Sydney was making that call, and Tammy said that if he did make the call, he had a reason to call. They also went over the calls between Sydney's and Heather's cell phones that night. Tammy said two of those calls were blocked, and they couldn't tell who they were from. The others they could see were from Heather. Tammy said she could hear Heather's voice in the phone call, so she knew it was her. Lieutenant Rodriguez showed Tammy a hotel room key card that they had found in Heather's car. The key card matched a room that Sydney Moore had rented. Rodriguez said she showed Tammy that to illustrate that Sydney and Tammy had a more serious affair than just a text or tweet. Tammy had written a post on Facebook prior, telling her followers that the affair had just been something that happened in the backseat of a car, and Rodriguez wanted to show her that that wasn't true. She said Tammy appeared interested in the key card and took a picture of it with her cell phone. Tammy told her she didn't know about the payphone call, but did know about all the other calls. She said Sydney would always tell her about them. She said, "Sydney doesn't keep secrets from me." An employee who works at Beach Ford in Myrtle Beach testified that Tammy and Sydney came in and purchased a black Ford F-150 truck on November 8, 2013. He said they traded in a white truck. He told the court that Tammy controlled the room. Laura Garlitz, a realtor who lives in Horry County, testified that she knew the Moores. She said their kids were friends. Her son went over to the Moores' house often and even went to Disney World with their family once. She said they remained friends until around the time Heather went missing, although it wasn't related to that. On the Saturday night before Heather went missing, she said the whole Moore family came over to her house. Sydney and Tammy had bought a new truck, a big black truck, and they drove it over. She said Tammy had been drinking and Sydney was following behind her. Tammy wanted to smoke a joint, and so she and Tammy smoked in her bedroom. After Heather went missing, Laura said Tammy told her that the affair between Sydney and Heather was just Heather giving Sydney oral sex and that he didn't even like it. Tammy told her that she had a boyfriend too, some guy in a rock band. Sometime prior to the trial, Tammy messaged Laura's son on Facebook and said something about him testifying and not being loyal to her. Laura said she was logged into her son's Facebook, she has his password, and saw the message, but she never told her son about it. She said her son barely went on Facebook. A musician named Kevin Hummel testified about an online relationship he had with Tammy in the fall of 2013. He said he had first met her in 1988 after he graduated high school, but they reconnected years later. She reached out to him on Facebook in the fall of 2013, and they started talking through phone and text. He said their communication was sexual in nature, that he was single and she was looking for somebody to have sex with. They stopped talking in December 2013. Jill Domagower, a crime scene investigator with the Horry County Sheriff's Department, testified that during a search of Heather's vehicle, she found Heather's ID, social security card, bank card, and cosmetology license. She did not locate Heather's car keys or cell phone. Domagower was also involved in the search of Heather's apartment, as well as the Moore's home, and the home belonging to Tammy's parents. She said she saw no signs of forced entry to Heather's apartment, and that she found a pregnancy test box in the trash in one of the bathrooms. She never found the actual testing stick, just the box. Tammy's attorney asked if any of Heather's DNA was found in the Moore's home, and Domagower said no. On redirect, solicitor Nancy Livesay pointed out that the home was searched in February, 2 months after Heather's disappearance. Peter Sester, another lieutenant with the Horry County Sheriff's Department, testified that he went to the Moore's home to take photos on December 20th, 2 days after Heather disappeared. He said Tammy invited them into her residence and that she escorted him around while he took photos. He said he was just documenting the overall condition of the house. He told the court that in front of a camper at the home, he photographed a shotgun shell casing, cement mix, and some kind of cleaner. Those photos were shown to the jury. Lindsay McGraw, a computer forensic investigator with the South Carolina Attorney General's Office, testified that he looked at the navigation system from the Moore's truck. He said the device can only collect location data when the SD card is in the truck. He said the device recorded on November 8th, when the truck was first purchased, but that after that, it recorded no other data in Horry County. On November 22nd, it recorded data in Shawnee, Oklahoma, and then 2 days later in Las Vegas, Nevada. This was when the Moores went on a road trip that month. There was no data for when the truck returned to Horry County and nothing recorded at all in December 2013. The device picked up a location again in January 2014 in Kissimmee, Florida. McGraw said that because it didn't record any locations in Horry County, that meant that the device either didn't work or that the SD card had been removed. The prosecution pointed out that the device was functional in November and in January, so it was working. Some additional testimony in Tammy's trial that we didn't hear about in Sydney's trial were detailed text messages coming from both Tammy's and Sydney's cell phones leading up to Heather's disappearance. In their opening statements, the prosecution had said that Tammy had taken Sydney's cell phone away from him and was using it herself after she found out about the affair. Then the morning Heather went missing, Sydney got his phone back. To illustrate all of this, they called Will Lynch from the North Myrtle Beach Police Department to the stand. Lynch testified that Tammy was using Sydney's phone in November, all the way through December 18, 2013, and that right after Heather disappeared, Sydney started using his phone again. He pulled out specific text messages as examples. First, starting with text messages from Tammy's cell phone. On November 5th, 2013, she references a text message that Heather sent to Sydney's cell phone. Heather had sent a period symbol. Tammy text messaged her friend, "Just got a period from the little cunt. It's trying to communicate." Her friend asked, "What'd she say?" Tammy responded, "She's trying to start a conversation." Her friend asked, "With you or Sydney?" And Tammy responded, "That phone number. I didn't respond. Not sure what's in that twisted mind." On November 15th, Tammy texted a friend named Christine and wrote, "Just in case my phone dies, my other number is the same, but ends in 5, which would be Sydney's cell phone. Lynch said that text message was deleted. On December 8th, Tammy text messaged 3 other friends, telling them that her phone battery was dying and to text her other phone. She then listed out Sydney's cell phone number. And on Sydney's phone, there were also text messages and web searches that showed that Tammy was the one using his phone. On November 6th at 1:19 a.m., an incoming message to Sydney's phone read, "Mom, are you on Instagram from Dad's phone? Liking my pictures and videos? Can I have it when you get home?" Sydney's phone responded, "No, it's for Christmas." The person responded, "Mom, please." And then there were additional outgoing messages that referenced Daddy and I. Then on December 16th, sexual messages were sent out from Sydney's phone that were obviously from a female to a male named Caleb. At one point, Sydney's phone texted, "When do you turn 19? The sexual messages continued until December 17th, when it appeared the conversation changed because there was a phone call from Caleb's mother to Sydney's phone. Right after the phone call at 11:47 p.m., Sydney's phone texted, "Dude, I think your mom just called. I gave her a fake name. I told her my name was Terry." Lynch said that after that conversation, the communication stops between her and Caleb. Then, in the early morning hours of December 18th, the morning Heather went missing, there were 3 outgoing calls made from Sydney's phone to Kevin Hummel, the musician who said he had been text messaging with Tammy. Those calls were made at 1:09 a.m. and 1:13 a.m. Lynch then read text messages between Sydney's phone and Heather's phone during the month of November. These text messages also came in during Sydney's trial, so I'm not going to detail them again here. Essentially, on November 2nd, there are text messages going back and forth, with Sydney's phone asking, "Who is this?" and Heather asking, "So when does Sydney get his phone back?" and, "So that's why you're still childishly texting me from your cheating husband's phone," as though Sydney is not the one using his phone. And at the very end of the conversation, Heather simply sends a period. Lynch also testified that on Tammy's phone were messages about how she felt about Sydney, his affair with Heather, and what she thought of Heather herself. On November 6th, after midnight, Tammy received a text message from her sister Ashley that said, "We are walking around Broadway. Josh wants to have a drink at Tilted Kilt." Tammy responded, "Did you tell him? Please don't. Take pics for me." Ashley wrote, "No, we just walked by and had a drink. She wasn't there." And Tammy responded, "I think that bitch is in hiding." On November 13th, Tammy sent text messages to her sister again, referencing searching through Sydney's communications with Heather. She wrote, "I saw my Sprint bill last month. There was a lot more. Well, I can't see them all. I think I'm going to have to spend $70 to see the messages. but hey, I will. On November 15th, Tammy texted a friend, kind of looks like Sydney's girlfriend. The friend responded, the boy? And Tammy said, yeah, but her beard wasn't that thick. Another text to a friend read, you think I look decent enough to start dating again? To which the friend replied, shut up about dating again. You love your husband. You guys are adorable together. You're crazy, girl. Tammy responded, I do not love him. He betrayed me and I will never ever forgive or forget it. Trust me, there's zero love on my end. I fucking hate him. Another text on December 6th from Tammy read, now he has to stay chained to the bed until further notice while I live my life as a single woman. It's all good. Have hope that things will be okay after I enjoy my single year. Tammy's web history from her phone included a magic ball app where she typed, was Sydney in love with his whore? And then a few searches on full moon phases. Lynch also testified about the text messages in the early morning hours of December 18th, when Heather disappeared. At 1:47 a.m., Tammy's phone received a text message from her sister Ashley that read, y'all gonna go to the store? We don't need the ad now. Then at 3:10 a.m., Tammy responded, got the ad. She then texted, home. At 3:17 a.m., the incoming call from Heather came through to Sydney's phone, and they spoke for about 4 minutes. Then, at 3:38 a.m., there are unanswered calls from Heather. About an hour and a half later, at 4:37 a.m., Tammy texted Sydney, which was the very first message between the two phones since early November. She wrote, can you please bring me an orange juice with pot stickers? Sydney responded, yes, ma'am. And Tammy wrote, thank you. That following day, Tammy and Sydney's phones began communicating regularly again, with messages referencing what their kids would want for Christmas from Santa. James Perry from the Greenville County Sheriff's Office testified that he was able to recover messages from Sydney's computer that he couldn't recover from Sydney's iPhone. They were text messages from the conversation between Sydney's phone and Heather's phone on November 2nd, 2013. The following messages had been deleted and were all from Sydney's phone to Heather. Someone's about to get their ass beat down. Your bitch is about to take his last breath. I frown upon people who hang up on me. Not cool. You can tell me who you are right now, or I can find out another way. That way won't have a good turnout for you. I've been having Sydney followed since January 2012. It's best you call back and speak immediately to save yourself. I'll give you one last chance to answer me before we meet in person. Only one. Hey, sweetie, you ready to meet the missus? The kids want to meet you. He also testified that Sydney's phone was powered off and then powered back on at 3:02 a.m. on December 18th. Heather's roommate, Bree Worrellman, again took the stand in this trial. She said Heather was hysterical when Heather called her at 1:44 a.m. on December 18th.
Now, you can't tell me what she said, but tell these people what you said to her.
I told her not to do anything rash and to get some sleep and that we would talk about it in the morning.
And did you reference anybody when you were talking to her?
My exact words were, do not call Sydney back, don't do anything rash, go to sleep, and we'll talk about it tomorrow.
When is the next time that you heard from her?
I haven't.
Bree told the jury that Heather was terrified of Tammy and that she didn't agree with Heather's relationship with Sydney from day one.
And how did Heather feel about Tammy or react to Tammy?
She was scared of Tammy.
And was she ever scared of Sydney?
No.
And how did she feel about Sydney?
She loved him.
She said she was concerned when the relationship ended because of Tammy.
And did you have any concerns for her?
I did, because of what had happened when the relationship ended.
and what had happened when the relationship ended that gave you those concerns?
Phone calls, text messages. Heather was petrified of Tammy. She thought she was going to show up to our job. She wanted nothing to do with it. She wanted nothing to do with Tammy. She just wanted to be left alone.
Bree said that Sydney told her and Heather that he had an open marriage. She was also asked about the pregnancy test found in the garbage can at hers and Heather's apartment. She said it wasn't hers. John Calder, a senior investigator with the Ora County Sheriff's Department Crime Scene Unit, testified that he took photos of and examined Tammy and Sydney's truck, but he said he didn't swab it for Heather's DNA.
Okay, and if you don't mind, tell the jury why you didn't at that time.
At that point in time, the only information that I had or knowledge of this case, I was just informed to just go and assist, that there was a missing female and the vehicle belonged to a person that she had a relationship with. So at that point, my understanding to me was that the missing persons had been in the vehicle. So there would have been no need for the fingerprinting because it just would have solidified that she could have been in the vehicle she had access to.
So at that time, you didn't know that the vehicle was purchased after that relationship ended?
No.
Okay.
Irene Moore, Sydney's mom, took the stand next. She testified that she's known Tammy since Tammy and her son started dating about 20 years ago. When asked how often Sydney would see his family, she said he only saw his family once in 20 years without Tammy being there. She told the court that Tammy, Sydney, and their children showed up to her house on Christmas Eve 2013 at about 10 p.m. It had been a while since she had seen them, and she wasn't expecting them. They stayed for a couple hours, and she and her husband sat down with Sydney and Tammy.
Now, in the course of that conversation, did Tammy say anything about the fact that Sydney had had an affair?
Sydney made those comments.
Okay.
Objection, Your Honor.
The study can't get into anything with somebody else.
Yes, sir.
Disregard that last response.
Tell this jury what Tammy told you she did to Sydney.
Do you want me to say that word? She said she beat the hell out of him.
When she saw them next in January 2014, she said they were still together. She said he had gotten a tattoo that said Tammy right across his stomach area. He had no other tattoos, and she didn't know him to have that one prior to that time frame. Donald DeMarino, Tammy's second cousin, testified that he and Tammy always got along well and that he's known her all of his life. After Heather went missing, he was over at Sydney and Tammy's house when he says he saw a photo of Heather.
While you were over there, after Heather went missing, did you see a picture of Heather Elvis at that house?
Yes.
And what did you see that picture on?
A phone.
Okay, a phone. And what kind of phone did you see it on?
A Boost Mobile phone.
Okay.
Flip phone.
Okay, a Boost Mobile flip phone.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Now, when you saw that picture of Heather Elvis, in that picture, could she move at all?
I don't think so.
Okay. And did it look like she could talk?
No.
And after you saw the picture, what did you do?
Nothing. I didn't know what to do.
Okay. Did you stay in the house or did you leave?
I left.
Okay.
When asked if he knew why that picture was taken, he said, "I believe for Tammy Moore." After seeing it, he said he didn't continue to hang out with Sydney and Tammy. He acknowledged that he's been arrested before for burglary and for some other stuff, but said the solicitor's office hasn't done anything for him or offered him anything for his testimony. He said what he's testifying to today is true.
And after seeing that picture, do you expect anybody to hear from Heather Owens?
No.
On cross-examination, he admitted that the first time he ever told anyone about the picture was about a year later when he was in jail. He told a fellow inmate about it, and that inmate told other people in the jail, who then went to the solicitor's office. He clarified that he had seen the photo at a family barbecue and that he had been smoking a cigarette with Sydney when Sydney showed him. Tammy's attorney then asked him if he had told his mom on a jailhouse call that he had only said something about the picture to get a deal on his charges. DeMarino said that wasn't true. But then the defense played the audio recording of the phone call, and in it, his mom asks why he didn't tell her about it, and he says because it's not true. After listening to the call play in the courtroom, DeMarino said that he had lied to his mom because he didn't want to stress her out. After DeMarino's testimony, the state then rested. Among the witnesses on the defense's witness list were Tammy's three children as well as her mother. But before they could call anyone to the stand, the state had a complaint for the judge. They claimed that while Tammy's three children and mother were in another room in the courthouse, they had broken the judge's sequestration order and had been watching a live stream of the trial, which was not allowed. To prove their point, they called a deputy to the stand, who confirmed that she had witnessed them watching the live stream from a laptop. She said she confiscated the laptop, but 20 minutes later, they had their cell phones out and were watching on those. The judge ruled that he believed there was a violation, even though Tammy's eldest son took the stand and said it wasn't true. And as a result, the defense would no longer be allowed to call those witnesses. The defense was able, however, to call Tammy's sister Ashley to the stand. Ashley testified that the Moores always had an ornament on the antenna of their truck, a Mickey Mouse ornament that they swapped out for the holidays, an ornament that wasn't seen on the truck in the surveillance video. Tammy's attorney showed her photos of Sydney's and Tammy's bedroom and asked her to describe their bed. She said it's a sleigh bed made of wood and that it doesn't have any spindles or anything that could fit a handcuff around. Ashley said the Moores had nanny cams in their house when the kids were younger, but that they no longer worked and had been removed a while ago. She said the Moores had installed cameras outside their home after Heather's disappearance because they were being harassed and the kids were terrified. Ashley testified that she lived with her mom and dad in a house right next door to Tammy's and Sydney's house. She said her mom would get up every morning at 3:30 a.m. to get ready for work and would then leave the house at 5. She said her mom did this on the morning of December 18th, too. Her father also got up early that morning, she said, to go to the farmer's market with a friend of his named Frank. And then Ashley provided an alibi for Tammy for around the time when Heather disappeared from Peachtree Landing. On the night of December 17th, Ashley said Tammy's and Sydney's three children stayed with her. Sydney was working that night, and Tammy went with him, which she said Tammy did sometimes. When they got home at about 3:10 a.m., Tammy texted her to let her know they were back and also to let her know that she got her a grocery store ad. Ashley said she likes to coupon and wanted to compare prices on the grocery store ad. She said when she got the text, she rounded up the kids and let them out the front door and watched as they walked across the yard to their house. She saw Tammy and Sydney at their front door. She said the kids were homeschooled and that it wasn't unusual for them to stay up late, nor was it unusual for them to go home in the middle of the night. At 7 a.m., she said she texted Tammy to ask her for a key ring with the shopper's cards on it. She then walked over to the Moores and retrieved it from their truck. As for Sydney's tattoo, she said her friend's husband did it and that he got it done in January 2012. Ashley also testified that she had been with Sydney when he purchased a gun and that they had purchased it after Heather went missing because they were all being harassed and felt unsafe. On cross-examination, solicitor Nancy Livesay started by saying, "I'm glad you brought harassment up."
Tell this jury about the text when you said, "We are walking around Broadway. Josh, who you said your boyfriend, wants to have a drink until tequila." You remember that?
Yes.
And she said, "Did you tell him, please don't take a pic for me?" You remember that?
Yes.
And you said, "No, we just walked back, had a drink," and she wasn't there. You remember that?
Yes.
And she wrote you back, "I think the bitch is in hell."
Yes.
Okay. Now, I'm assuming this is the young lady you were looking for.
I wasn't looking for anyone. We had a drink at Tilt the Kilt.
But you responded back, no, she wasn't there.
Yes.
Okay. So you at least had to look around to know if she was there or not, right?
Yes.
Okay, tell the jury, is this the woman you were looking for?
That is who she's referring to. I was not looking for anyone.
So when you said, no, she wasn't there, you were lying to Tammy. You didn't know if she was there or not.
I didn't see her.
Okay. So to not have seen her, you would have to be looking, wouldn't you, to know if she was there or not. Correct?
Correct. So
okay.
I wasn't looking. That's what I'm trying to say is we stopped her for a drink. I did tell my sister I was there. She's insinuating that I was looking for her.
Okay. And she responds back, no, I think a bitch is in hell.
She did.
Okay. At that time, how old were you?
Was it 2013? I would have been about 30.
About 30? And I'm assuming you were about the same size you are now?
Yes.
And how about Tammy? How old was she?
I'm not really sure how old she is right now. Say she's 12 years older than me. Subtract.
I feel like you're looking at her, but she's
older
than you. Okay, but she's older than you.
Yes.
By how many years?
12.
Okay, so if you were 30, she was 42.
Yes.
Okay, so you and your sister, who's 42, are in there looking for a 20-year-old girl at Tilt the Kilt. Is that right?
Incorrect. My sister's not in there, and I was not in there looking for her.
But you looked around because you said she wasn't in there.
She wasn't there, but I wasn't looking for her.
Ashley was asked if she remembers what she told the police back when they interviewed her after Heather disappeared.
And do you remember telling the police that Tammy took more offense to Heather because she was so young? She was, says here, because Cindy's with them and that this girl was closest in age to their oldest son. Do you remember that?
I think I said that. I said I thought it was pretty gross that he would do something that close.
Why no?
I believe that was my opinion. I think that he was doing something with someone so close in age to his child. I don't know if that was Tammy's opinion as well, but that was something I think I said.
She was also asked about her having told police that she knew about Sydney being handcuffed to the bed.
So now when he asked you, did Tammy tell you about handcuffing Sydney to the bed? Your answer was, yes, I'm aware of it.
I'm aware of handcuffing him, yes.
Okay.
But not to hold him against his will against the bed.
Okay. The officer then asked, can you tell me if this is what you said? And he was okay with that? You said that's what he agreed to. He seemed to be fine. I'd go over there and I'd see him even. And I'm like, really? This is what you want to do? So did you see Sydney handcuffed to the bed?
No, because there's no way to handcuff him to the bed.
So when you told the officer that you'd been over there and seen him even handcuffed to the bed, you were lying?
No, I was not lying. I haven't seen him handcuffed to the bed.
But you will admit that's what you told the police?
I told him that they played with handcuffs. That's what I know. And at the time, everything that is being repeated, he is literally telling me and telling me in the car. He showed me pictures of this, pictures of that. Sydney did this, Sydney did that. I'm being told half the story while I'm sitting in the car with this officer.
Ashley said she was very confused during her interview with police and that she doesn't remember a lot of it. She said investigators were feeding her information and she was telling them hearsay. When asked if she remembers the date Tammy and Sydney were arrested, she said no. She knows it was late February 2014, but doesn't recall the exact date. She said her memory was better about the night of December 18th because she was couponing that night.
When you testified earlier about what happened on December 18th, you were very detailed. Do you remember that?
On December 18th?
Yes.
Because I was specifically doing something that I remember on my behalf.
What were you specifically doing that made it that memorable, more so than the police showing up and arresting your sister? What was going on?
The reason why, I don't normally stay up all night, and that was one of the nights that I literally stayed up. I did not go to sleep because of the fact that Violet was doing triple coupons. As soon as it's as stupid as it sounds, that's what I was doing, and I was up all night doing that.
Solicitor Livesay said that never before had Ashley ever said anything about her mom having been up at 3:30 a.m., and Ashley responded that no one had ever asked her. She was then asked about the threatening text messages that Tammy had sent to Heather.
Now, would you consider a text from Tammy to Heather saying someone's about to get their ass beat down? Would you consider that a threat?
It would be to Sydney, because that's what she was referring to.
I'm sorry?
The text is a reference to her telling Heather, or whoever she thought was at the time, that Sydney was going to get his ass beat. So, yeah, it's a threat to Sydney.
Okay. How about you can tell me who you are right now, or I will find out another way. That way it won't have a great turnout for you.
That sounds more threatful, I suppose, but it's not an actual threat, no.
So you would consider that a threat?
I mean, she didn't say what she was going to do or if there was something that was going to happen, so.
Okay. How about, I've been having Sydney file it since 2012. It's best you call me back and speak immediately. Save yourself. Does that sound like a threat?
What's the threat?
I'm sorry?
What is the threat in the sentence?
I'm asking you.
I don't think it's a threat.
You don't think that's a threat?
No.
Okay, how about I'm giving you one last chance to answer before we meet in person? Only one. That sound like a threat to you?
No.
That does not sound like a threat?
No, but the reason why some people take that as a threat is because they don't know. I understand what the meaning of the text was versus what people take it as.
Okay. How about, hey, sweetie, you ready to meet the missus? That sound like a threat to you?
Sounds like she's saying, are you ready to meet the missus?
Solicitor Livesay asked about a friend of Ashley's named Jennifer. Ashley said she was a friend of hers that used to live here. Nancy asked if she remembered telling Jennifer that her family had killed people in the past and would kill her as well. Ashley said that wasn't true and that Jennifer is still one of her best friends and will testify if needed. The defense next introduced a witness whose testimony might provide another suspect in Heather's disappearance. Sydney Moffitt testified that she knew Heather from when they worked together in 2012. She told the court that at the time, Heather was living with her then-boyfriend, Jeremy. One day, Heather came into work with bruises on her neck and didn't want to go home, so she started living with Sydney. Sydney said Heather told her the bruises were from Jeremy. When asked why Heather wouldn't just move back home with her parents, Heather had told her that she didn't want her parents to know about her abusive relationship. Sydney said she last spoke with Heather via text in early 2013. On cross-examination, Solicitor Livesay asked, she didn't go missing while dating Jeremy, did she? And Sydney responded, no, ma'am. Solicitor Livesay also asked, did you know in November 2013, shortly before she went missing, Tammy Moore was threatening her? Sydney said, no, ma'am. The defense also called a man named Evan German to the stand, who testified that he had told people he saw Heather after her disappearance at a bar, but that it was a case of mistaken identity. He said he watched the surveillance video from the bar with investigators and that it wasn't her. The defense then called the records custodian from a local hospital to the stand, who testified that Tammy went to the ER on March 25th, 2014, about a month after she had been arrested. She had a positive pregnancy test and was 6 weeks pregnant. In May 2014, she was no longer pregnant. Tammy Moore then took the stand next. According to the defense's opening statement, this would be the first time Tammy could freely tell her side of the story. And right from the start, Tammy detailed how her life has been a nightmare since this case first started. She talked about how her father passed away while she has been incarcerated, how her kids were no longer getting A's in school, how she had a miscarriage while in jail, and how when she tried to be let out on bond due to her pregnancy, the prosecution accused her of lying about it. She said when she lost the baby, she was never taken to the hospital. She was asked about where she went when she was released from jail, when she was finally granted bond in January 2015. But instead of answering, she directed her attention to the jury.
After you got released, you don't have to tell me exactly where you went, but did you and your family go to live somewhere else?
Yes, we were here for a little bit, and there was a lot of hatred, stalking, And it's not the community, because let me be clear, there was another side to this. There was a side where we'd go out and people would, we're so sorry this is happening to you. We love your family. Let us do good things for you. They would give us free food in restaurants. There were ladies that would come to my house and bring us groceries because we couldn't work. We had people buying me clothes, buying my daughter clothes, buying my little boy toys, video games, things like that. We had a lot of support in this community, a lot. I mean, it was the only time I ever had anything happen to us was one time we were at Sam's and a lady shouted a nasty derogatory word in front of all of us. That's the only negative thing I had happen physically to me. Everyone else would come out and help our family. My mom had tons of support, and we still do. But our supporters are scared to show up in this courtroom because of threats that are made on our supporters. And I just want you all to know that.
She said she and her family moved to Florida and lived in a little camper. They were in the middle of purchasing property in Florida, but never got to because of all of this, she said, gesturing to the courtroom. She said she found out about Sidney having an affair early on Halloween morning. She didn't know who he was having the affair with, and that Sidney led her to believe that it was a man. In 2012, she said he had been caught sending dirty text messages to someone else. She had told him then that he had broken the trust of their family, and she considered divorcing him. She said stupidly, she forgave him. The next thing she knew, he was getting texts again from someone else and trying to hide them. She said she never saw the actual messages, but that Halloween night, he kept getting texts from someone and was trying to hide his phone from her. She said she asked him to see the phone, but he had already deleted them. She didn't know what he was hiding.
At some point, did you learn who he was having an affair with?
Not until the girl called me back and told me who she was. I had no idea. So the messages were never directed towards Heather Ellis. They were directed to the mystery person. I just wanted to know who it was.
Wanted to know who it was?
I just wanted to know who it was.
And did you feel like you had a right to know who it was?
I did. I didn't go about it the right way, and I'm sorry for that. It looks bad, but I just wanted to know who it was. That's all.
Tammy also told the court about when she first spoke to Heather Ellis.
At some point, did you make a decision that despite the affair with Heather Ellis, that you were not going to get a divorce? Did you make that decision or not yet?
I did. After I spoke with her, she was a nice girl. She told me everything that had happened. And when Sidney came home, I asked him to confirm it to see what his side of the story was. Heather told me that her and Sidney were really good friends.
Objection, Your Honor.
It's done.
All right. Don't tell me what she said. After you, and when you talked to her, how did you talk to her, on a phone or in person?
Don't on the telephone.
All right. And when was that thereabouts?
I think it was the 2nd of November. It was right after. It was after I was at trying to find out who it was. She called that within hours.
And after you spoke to her, did your impression of her soften?
Yes.
Okay. And did you know her prior to seeing her?
No, I've never met her.
In late November, she said their family went on a road trip for 21 days. They purchased a new truck, a black Ford F-150, for the trip. She said police took their truck twice, for almost 2 weeks right after Heather went missing, and then they took it again later. At some point, she had put a Mickey Mouse pumpkin on the antenna of the new truck, and she also had a Pirates of the Caribbean light-up skull on the trailer hitch. She said she was positive it was on the hitch the night of December 18th. She was handed a photo of her truck that investigators had taken on December 20th, 2 days after Heather's disappearance. There was a Mickey Mouse ornament on the antenna. She said she signed a consent to search form for the police to search their home because they were holding Sidney against his will, and she wanted them to leave her and her family alone. She said on December 19th, Heather's dad sent them a threatening text message, and so they had called 911 to report it. Sidney went outside their house to talk to a police officer. While she was on the phone with 911, she learned the police had already been there, watching them. As Tammy looked at the photo of her truck in court, she was asked about the concrete and the bottle of cleaning fluid. She said the cleaner was used to clean the outside of their camper and that it hadn't been used yet. As for the concrete, she said Sidney used to relay tile all the time at the restaurants he worked at, and that it was normal for him to have that. There were no efforts made to hide those materials.
Did you or to anyone, and to your knowledge, use some kind of concrete to try to bury and concrete a body?
Never.
Did you or somebody in your family, to your knowledge, use some kind of tile cleaner or cleaning fluid to try to clean up some kind of crime scene?
No.
Did you or anyone in your family, to your knowledge, use cleaning fluid to try to clean out your house?
No.
Did you or anyone, to your knowledge, use cleaning fluid to try to scrub up or clean out your truck?
No. The truck's dirty, too.
All right. Does that seem like just a kind of a preposterous question to ask you?
You have to ask it. We're in court.
She said she went on the trip with Sydney and their family after finding out about the affair, even though she was angry with him. They stayed at resorts and slept in the same bed. About Sydney's tattoo, she said he got it on January 16th, 2012, at about 4-something p.m. She identified photographs that she took from her iPhone that show Sydney being tattooed. She said the properties on the photo read, Monday, January 16th, 2012, at 5:20 p.m. She said Sydney was not forced to get that tattoo, that it had nothing to do with Heather Elvis. When asked if she had ever been to Peachtree Landing, she said she went there once to take her son fishing, but that was the last time. She didn't go there after midnight on December 18th, 2013, and no one that she knows or is associated with went either. She told the court that the neighbors who live right behind her also had a black Ford F-150 truck that looked extremely similar to theirs, but she didn't know their names. She said that neighbor also has a boat. Regarding handcuffing Sydney to the bed, she said that wasn't possible with the type of bed they had, and that she and Sydney only used handcuffs when they were being intimate with each other. She then went over where she was the night Heather disappeared. She said she normally helped Sydney while he worked and would help him shop for things he would need. She said she was with him on December 18th. They stopped at Longhorn's to check on something and then went by Sticky Fingers, another restaurant, at two different times. At some point, they went to Walmart to purchase herself a pregnancy test, and they also stopped by Broadway at the beach, where they had sex in the back of the truck. From there, they went to a gas station, and then there were Christmas lights Sydney wanted her to see, so they drove over there. She said that night, her sister Ashley was couponing, and she had asked Tammy to grab her a physical ad from a store called Bilo on the way home. She said they went by, and she doesn't remember who went in to get it, but one of them did. She said there should be video of that somewhere. She said there was nothing sinister about anything they did that night. She texted her sister when they got home at 3:10 a.m., saying, home. That meant they were pulling up and Ashley would send the kids back. She said the kids came home. Sydney went over and picked up their youngest son and carried him. Their kids stayed with them for the rest of the night. She said at one point during the night, Sydney went outside to feed the dogs and ran into her dad, who was getting ready to leave with his friend Frank. She said they scared each other when they saw each other. She didn't go to bed right away. She said she had a lot to do. The homeschool samples were due, and so she was up doing that until well after 4 a.m. She said she posted about this on her Facebook that night. Tammy said she believed Sydney's relationship with Heather was over. She was asked if she was aware that Sydney had made a phone call to Heather from a payphone. She said she was not aware of that, and that Sydney denies it to her. She said she doesn't remember him ever leaving the truck for 5 minutes to do that. She called it a so-called phone call. She said she used the pregnancy test they bought at Walmart and that it indicated that she was not pregnant then. She told the court after they got home, she stayed home until her mom called her about a flat tire the following afternoon. Ashley had texted her at 7:02 a.m. and said she needed to get her key ring with her store cards out of Tammy's truck. She opened the truck from her keys and Ashley got what she needed from the truck. She said she had just gone to sleep the hour before. Sydney was in bed right next to her, and their youngest son was sleeping in the chair in their room. The next day, around noon, she, Sydney, and the kids went into Myrtle Beach. Her mom had a flat tire on her dad's truck. Sydney drove her and the kids to Dollar General in Myrtle Beach. She and her eldest son went with Sydney to fix the tire, while everyone else stayed at the store. The family then went to a bank and then home. She did not know anything had happened to Heather at this time. It was a completely normal day. She said she and Sydney went to work as normal, and she was on Facebook as normal. She said everything is in the records and will show where they were at. Tammy's attorney then went over the phone records with her. She addressed the phone call between Heather and Sydney at 3:17 in the morning. She said she walked in on a phone conversation between them that was just ending.
I found out after the fact. He told me who it was, but I just heard a girl's voice, and it was just, he told him to leave him alone.
So when you say I walked in, do you know where you walked into?
I walked through the foyer and to my, I think it was the door of my bedroom right there.
And do you know what prompted you to walk in to your bedroom?
My bathroom in there.
And you heard a woman's voice talking on the phone?
I could hear a woman's voice, yes.
And did you know who that was?
Not until after he hung up and I asked him.
Did you ask him who was calling?
Yes.
And what did he say?
He said it was Heather.
All right. And then did you call her?
No.
Did she call back?
She called four more times.
All right. Do you remember the phone ringing?
No.
All right. Did anybody answer the phone when whoever the woman was called back?
No.
Okay. What did you then do in regards to your husband, Sydney?
Nothing. I went to the bathroom and came back to the computer to finish what I was doing.
All right. And did anything unusual happen in terms of you and Sydney after that time?
No.
Did you fly into a rage and get in the truck and drive down to the boat landing?
Of course not.
Did Sydney say he had to go somewhere to get in the truck and leave?
No.
Anything out of the ordinary occur?
No.
Tammy said they learned Heather was missing the next day while they were at Sticky Fingers. A detective called Sydney and told him. She said they were under surveillance after Heather's disappearance, that police knew everything they did.
Did you kidnap Heather Ellis?
No, I did not.
Do you know who kidnapped her?
I do not.
Do you know if she's been kidnapped?
I do not.
Have you been living under this cloud for almost 5 years?
Right, 5 years now.
Has that been easy?
No, it has not.
Is this the first opportunity that you've had to publicly declare your innocence?
It is. I had a gag order over my case.
Are you glad that you're able to tell people what happened and what you did do and didn't do?
I want people to know the truth, and I too want Heather found. I think she deserves to be found, and I think they botched her case and didn't do justice for Heather.
Solicitor Nancy Livesay did the cross-examination.
Ms. Moore, do you know who I am?
I do.
Okay, and who am I?
Nancy Livesay. You've made my life miserable. Am I allowed to ask you a question?
No, ma'am.
No, okay. Sorry.
This is Father.
This is Adam. Okay. And I noticed you mentioned some other people by first and last name. Alan Barge, Jeff Cowell.
Yes.
You know all those people?
Yes.
Okay. You got those names on a list somewhere?
Well, those were the two that arrested us in the beginning, so that's why I remember them.
But do you have our name on a list somewhere?
I've seen you in the court trials against my husband.
Have you sent your sister up here to take any pictures of me?
No.
Okay.
Tammy told Solicitor Livesay that she couldn't control Sydney and that she was only mad about the affair at first and only because he had initially lied to her. But Livesay showed her a text message that she had sent to Sydney on October 24th.
Look there at 10:24, 3:25 a.m.
10:24.
Okay, you see it?
Yeah.
Okay, so you would admit you sent a message saying, I know you were scared about me finding something. That passcode will be changed to something I know, and I want to add the tracking to your phone.
Yes.
And that was going to Sydney?
Yes.
Okay, and I'm assuming you wanted to change the passcode so you could get into the phone whenever you wanted, right?
Right.
Okay, and you wanted a tracking device on his phone so you could know whatever that phone number was.
Yes, a family tracking device, actually.
Okay. So you would know where everybody was, right?
Well, I know where my mom is because she's part of the Sprint network and our iPad location thing, iPhone.
Okay.
Whatever the iTunes is. I don't look at my mom 24/7, but I could if I wanted to.
Solicitor Livesay asked about the threatening text messages she had sent to Heather. Tammy maintained that those weren't meant for Heather specifically, that she didn't know who was having the affair with her husband.
And you said earlier she was a nice girl, right?
She was nice to me, and I was nice back to her. Those messages you're about to read are not after that fact that we... It was over and done, Nancy, in 2 days.
Okay. So when you sent, "I frown upon people who hang up on me," not cool.
Didn't know who she was. I had not spoken to her.
Well, she hung up on you, right?
But she didn't speak to me. I didn't know if it was a man or woman. I didn't know who that was.
So when she picked up the phone, she didn't say hello?
No.
Okay.
She also said the text messages weren't really threatening. They were just meant to get the person to call her back so she would know who it was. After her text message that read, "I'm giving you one last chance to answer before we meet in person," she said Heather called and told her the truth, and they were fine.
And so then you wrote her, "Hey, sweetie," which indicates to me that you think it's a young woman, or at least a woman. "You ready to meet the missus?" And it's MRS.
That's Slater, correct?
That was on 11/2.
But it's Slater, and what you don't know, and what no one else has known up to now because of the gag order, is that Heather and I had a conversation. She told me what had happened with Sydney. She was willing to meet me and my children.
So before this, you're telling me you had a conversation with her?
I had a conversation with Heather.
Okay, and then after that, you wrote her, "Hey, sweetie.
Hey, sweetie, would you
ready to meet the missus?" And then the next...
Because that's what they nicknamed me, I guess, at the place. She was the one that called me that.
Okay.
I was referred to as the missus by the Tilted Kill people from what she told me.
Okay, so after you talked to her, you wrote her, "Hey, sweetie, you ready to meet the missus?"
Yes.
Okay, so at this point, you did know it was Heather Owens.
Yes.
Okay. And then you said the kids want to meet you.
Yes. Okay. They met his first person as well.
Okay.
She said the conversation she had with Heather was nice.
She didn't tell me to leave her alone. She told me what had happened. And she said she felt bad because he was married. I said, you know, I slept with a married man when I was actually 19 or 20 years old and didn't know. And I called the man's wife because he had children. It made me feel bad.
So several days passed, 11/2. Heather's left you alone. She doesn't want anything to do with y'all. On 11/11, your sister's in there trying to take pictures of her for you. And then on 11/13, which is days after, you are still trying to figure out to see the messages between him and her, correct?
I wanted to make sure that was a true statement, and I wanted to... And Ashley was just out and about, and that's mean. I agree. There was no need for that.
Okay.
So that doesn't mean I hate her. It doesn't mean I'd kidnap her or hurt her, ever.
Okay.
Solicitor Livesay also confronted her about things she said about Heather after Heather's disappearance.
After the girl went missing, you said, "Well, Sydney cheated on me in the months of September and October with a psycho whore."
Right.
And that's what you called her after the girl was missing.
And there's a reason why I believed the way I did. At that time, during that trip when that was posted, we were being stalked and harassed by a group of people. And that group of people is in this courtroom today, and they also called Heather a prostitute, slut, and a whore. I regret it. I don't know if they do.
Tammy said when she texted her friend in November about having chained Sydney to the bed, she was lying to her friend that she never did that. She was asked about the full moon web searches she had done. "Did you know that the night Heather Elvis was kidnapped, it was a full moon?" Solicitor Livesay asked her. "I did not," she said. Solicitor Livesay also confronted Tammy about the timeline. She said that according to Tammy, she heard Sydney on the phone with Heather at 3:17 a.m. That call lasted a little over 4 minutes. Then, at 3:35 a.m., their truck is seen going down the street by Peachtree Landing, according to the state's expert, Grant Fredericks.
The testimony was that your truck went down 8:14. You remember that test phone?
That's what you tell people.
Okay. But did you, do you remember Friday when the expert came in?
I don't consider him an expert, but...
But do you remember him saying it was your truck?
Of course I do. He's been paid a lot of money.
Okay. And do you remember him saying that it was heading past 814 camera at 3:35?
At 3:36, I was posting from my house on Facebook.
Do you remember him saying it passed at 3:35?
He can say anything you pay him to say.
Okay. But there's no doubt the phone call ends at 3:20. Between y'all's phone and her phone?
4 minutes. That's 3 minutes. It would be about 3:22.
Okay. So you would agree from 3:17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, it ends, and then at 3:35, your truck is going down 814 just a few minutes later. Is that correct?
My truck is not, but you have told people that and led them to believe that over the years. But my truck did not go to the landing that night.
Okay.
I promise you that on this Holy Bible.
Tammy said she was talking to Kevin Hummel, the man who testified that he had been exchanging sexual text messages with Tammy from the truck at the time Sydney went into Walmart around 1:15 a.m. Solicitor Livesay pointed out that about 10 minutes after they left Walmart, someone called Heather from the payphone, which was nearby. Tammy said it was not her or Sydney.
So you would agree, 1:21, y'all leave out of the Walmart, and 10 or 11 minutes later, this phone call has been made from the Kangaroo right up the street to Heather Ellis.
I didn't make a phone call to Heather Ellis.
Would you agree? You've heard the testimony, correct?
I've heard the testimony.
Okay, and you've seen the documents, the discovery, correct?
I didn't deny that she got a payphone call. I'm telling you, I didn't make a payphone call, and Sydney didn't make a payphone call. He was forced to tell the cops that. When they held him against his will.
Okay. It just happened that 10 minutes after you buy a pregnancy test, right up the road from the Walmart, that payphone called Heather Ellis.
What you're trying to trick everyone into believing doesn't make sense. Had it been before, you could have probably fooled people with that. This doesn't make sense.
As for why Sydney told the police that he did call Heather from the payphone, she said he was being held against his will and was forced to say that.
So when you're saying Sydney was held against his will and lied to the police about this payphone call, you really don't know. You're just saying...
No, I do know. I was there. I was eyewitness to it. Detective Cobble took force to Sydney, who's about a foot taller, pushed him up, said, "You're not going anywhere," and called him a few derogatory names, held him against his will at the police station. Sydney said, "Am I under arrest?" He said, "No, but you're not going anywhere." And he says, "Well, I want an attorney. I don't want to speak." I left Sydney. I don't know all the details except for what he's told me. And we're not allowed to testify on hearsay at that point. That's something you need to ask Sydney. I know what I saw. And they forced him to stay after he asked for an attorney and asked to leave and asked if he was detained. And they refused to let him go.
But you do know that he told the police he made a phone call.
I know he was persuaded to admit to a phone call, thinking it would send him home.
And you know that both of y'all's phones, when you were calling your boyfriend, was over there pinging by that payphone.
You're talking about an area in a 3-block range, so it could ping. Myrtle Beach is little, so if you want to say that it pinged there because of an odd reason, that's you, that's on you. But when we're going from one place and over to another place to get gas or whatever, it's the same tower.
Okay.
You can use it to be sinister if you choose to. I'm telling you the truth.
Okay.
Throughout her testimony, Tammy kept referencing two Facebook posts she made in the early morning hours of December 18th. Facebook posts that she said would prove that she was home at the time that Heather disappeared from Peachtree Landing. The timestamps on the posts were 4:31 a.m. and 4:58 a.m. Tammy said that due to daylight savings time, the times were really 3:31 a.m. and 3:58 a.m. But Solicitor Livesay pointed out that even if that was true, she still couldn't account for her time from 3:35 to 3:55.
The truck is on the road from 3:35 to at least 3:46. At least.
And my post is at what time?
I gave you 3:31.
So I'm posting at 3:31.
Yes.
And you're saying within a couple of minutes that I get up and I leave and do something sinister, come right back?
I'm saying, and you've agreed, that there is nothing showing you on the phone, texting, calling, or posting at 3:35, at 3:40, at 3:41, at 3:45, at 3:50, and at 3:55.
No, and there's nothing showing that I went to a boat landing either.
Okay. But you would agree that your phone does show activity before?
All throughout the night, yes, ma'am.
And after?
Yes, ma'am.
Solicitor Livesay also pulled out a printout of directions from Facebook's own website on how to change a date and time on a post on your timeline. She handed it to Tammy, who said she wasn't aware that you could do that. After a little more than 3 hours of deliberation, the jury found Tammy guilty of both kidnapping and conspiracy to commit kidnapping. Tammy spoke to the judge before sentencing and said she wasn't happy with her attorneys and that she was actually Heather's number one advocate.
Nor anything you want to say.
Yes, sir. I was never happy with my representation. I wanted different attorneys. I don't think they fought for me. They missed deadlines with you. I know that Fred was sent by Jimmy Richardson, the solicitor. I never felt comfortable with them, and I never had a way out. There was a lot I would have brought to the table that showed the truth in this courtroom, and had I not had the things I did have, we would never found like the T-Mobile discrepancy and that sort of thing. I felt like I had to do my own trial, and I'm not an attorney. I don't know how to do these things, and I just don't think I had a fair advantage over any of this. I'm a mom to four kids because I have an extra one right now that I'm looking out for. They don't have anybody else. They don't live in this state. We had to leave this state because of harassment. They don't have anybody else to care for them. And they need their mom. And I don't know what else to say to you. I am Heather's number one advocate. I want to know what happened to Heather, probably just as much as her parents do. I want to know what happened to her. I know I had nothing to do with her disappearance. I've never met her. I've never seen her in person. And the truth is in the boxes. The truth is in discovery. And they've not even shown me 90% of that. Where Heather is, they know where Heather is by that discovery. And it just has not been brought to court. I wanted it brought to court in light. I want to know what happened to you. And they need me. I feel like I'm begging for my life for something that I didn't do, that I didn't have anything to do with. And I wish that there was just a way to show you everything.
The judge sentenced her to 30 years for each charge, with credit for time served. Heather's dad, Terry Elvis, understandably had a hard time sitting through this trial. And while the trial was going on, he reportedly ran into one of Tammy's attorneys, Casey Brown, as he was walking out of the men's bathroom. Brown told the judge that Terry yelled at him and called him a lowlife and a piece of shit. And so the judge found Terry guilty of contempt of court and sentenced him to either pay a $400 fine or spend 30 days in prison. No word yet on when Sydney's retrial for the kidnapping charge will be, or if Heather will ever be located. And that's all for this episode. I'd like to know what you think about this case. What do you think about the prosecution's decision to charge Tammy with kidnapping and not with murder? What do you think happened the night Heather disappeared? Do you think Sydney will also be found guilty of kidnapping? Let me know by emailing me at podcast@courtjunkie.com, tweeting me at courtjunkiepod, or by joining my Facebook discussion group at courtjunkie.com/Facebook. Thanks everyone for listening. Until next time.